Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. So, quite suddenly, without expecting it, world humanity is once more on the brink of war that might rapidly lead to nuclear holocaust. That is not quite what has been on the agenda, what with the infernal plague that has killed millions worldwide, and for us agitated and visibly divided Americans, a very real concern about the chances of survival of our tottering democracy. Now, virtually without warning, we stare numbly into an escalating black hole that very well might annihilate our universal homestead. Yet we still must confront our other more domestic demons, if indeed this sudden moment of possible oblivion passes without world suicide. We have indeed been at this brink before. Preserving democracy through the right to vote is the main topic of today's program, followed by a eulogy for a friend for life. And something I wrote, Vote for Life and Liberty, Part 2. Once again, the United States of America is in need of a revolution to thwart incipient tyranny and despotic ambitions of mostly white, mostly Republican Party insurrectionists from seizing absolute control of the remnants of democratic government that operates on behalf of the people who are its plebeius unum. This necessary revolution is underwritten in the nation's fundamental principles and is sweeping in its implications as the original revolt against English rule, which was as corrupt, despotic, and hubristic as the recent misanthropic presidency of Donald Trump and his unconscionable cabal of vile oppressionists who were determined to dismantle democracy for their own personal autocracy. This revolution is the primal law of the land, despite ulterior machinations to restrict and ultimately abolish its sovereignty as the mainspring of democracy. Indeed, the law not only provides the mechanics of this necessary revolution, the law depends upon it to maintain its legitimacy and perhaps its very existence. This revolution is more binding than the ancient right to remove oppressive emperors in old China or revolt against cruel kings and church in medieval Europe, which more often in reality led to greater woe. This revolution is the vote, an invention of ancient Greece from about 508 BC, which has undergone many manifestations since then, not entirely progressive, yet increasingly directed toward universal suffrage. In the USA, evolution of the vote as the nation's most basic constitutional guarantee to all citizens after much struggle and amendment has continually been jeopardized through misuse as well as disuse. In general, hardly more than half of eligible voters go to the polls in special or general elections, although states like Oregon, which vote by mail, have a greater response. In essence, we have allowed the vote to be trivialized, and in many respects, quite unfortunately, through corruption, incompetence, and negligence, have robbed it of its manifest potency. Money has been a major source of perversion to the electoral process. Securely established incumbents at all levels of governance count on ever fewer people to vote to maintain their power in office, and on ever larger financial contributions from wealthy and corporate sponsors who use their influence to turn campaigns into public ordeals of fear and loathing. Even though he lost the presidency in the last national election as a result of huge public disgust, Donald Trump continues to contaminate the USA with the sludge of distorted reality and contemptible insurrection. Trump's presidency, a plague of misanthropy and sophistry, continues to plague the nation still roiled by the fetid subculture of prejudicial nativism and corrosive corruption de-instigated, and which continues to divide the nation's heart and soul so explosively. A significant number of Americans, mostly white malcontents, warped with prejudice and sedition, pledged loyalty to Trump and refused to acknowledge Joseph Biden as the lawfully elected 46th president of the USA. Racism and racially inspired religious intolerance have been the pillars upon which the totalitarian Trumpists affix to dismember democracy into a swinish, monarchical caricature of Trumpian dynasty. In direct response to their dramatic loss in the national election of 2020, Republicans are not only strangling voting rights, they are attempting to sideline the black vote in particular, as was successfully accomplished despite the 14th Amendment for nearly a century after the Civil War in the Jim Crow South, invoked by a reign of terror by white supremacists such as the Ku Klux Klan, which perpetrated black peonage until the Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. The anti-democracy premise that one political party be allowed absolute power in the absurd claim that a single ideology is infallible and every other option is perfidious and labeled unpatriotic as well as treacherous and disloyal is quite possibly the singularly most dangerous aspect of contemporary politics in the USA. Either the flagrant attempt at one-party misrule will be checked, or it will intensify the ruthless and hypocritical assault on bipartisan participatory democracy. Our revolutionary ancestors, who wrote the Constitution, knew very well that unchecked governments swallow the rights and liberties of their citizens, and that the natural inclination of authority is to concentrate and perpetuate its power by any means. These venerated ancestors insisted that basic human rights and freedoms would be foundations of government, and that the essential nucleus of democratic liberty was to be the voting power of each and every citizen. However, the ideal fell quite short. Blacks were ineligible because they were slaves, and native peoples were simply negated as savages, despite the insertion of Iroquois law, and whose lands were to be savagely appropriated. Although universal suffrage has been an aspirational goal, democracy is at present being shaken to its entangled roots, and its survival depends on the very primal citizenry it was construed to not only protect, but who are also constitutionally mandated to be its source of power. The vote is our real gold, the currency of liberty and justice for all. Proof of the vote's efficacy is the continual attempts to restrict or otherwise tamper with it, notoriously with gerrymandering, racial and ethnic isolation of presumed minorities, and for more than two centuries, denial of the vote to one half or more of the constituent population, women, who have been lawfully allowed to vote for exactly a century. On average, American elections are not conducted with assassinations other than those of character, nor with terrorism, imprisonment, with some exceptions, or threats to the lives of candidates or voters, a few exceptions to the rule also. However, the incessant problem with American elections is that blacks and other so-called minority populations, including enfranchised immigrants from disfavored parts of the world, race and or religion prioritized, and including lower class white citizens in many respects, are shunted out of the electoral process by right-wing politicians and party hacks, and recently by the Supreme Court majority that has nearly disemboweled the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Ultimately, all politics are local, despite national impact. While the trend seems to favor high-pressure political professionals who tendentiously fragment the electorate with nasty advertising and PAC-backed candidates. They are vulnerable to genuine populism of grassroots organizing and campaigning at the community level, in every community in the USA. The vote, ever since revolutionary times, has been considered a political musket in the closet, a singular, single shot available to every American citizen every election. And now, by E. J. Dionne Jr. Giving up on voting rights now would be unconscionable. If civil rights leaders had given up at the first signs of resistance to equality in the 1950s, our nation would never have won the next decade's great victories over racial subjugation. In the short run, this means fighting voter suppression and election subversion with whatever tools are at hand. Over the long term, building political power is the only way to win federal guarantee for ballot access. Walking away out of frustration or disillusionment is self-defeating. To avoid a demobilization that could lead to an anti-democratic retreat akin to the disgraceful reaction to Reconstruction, political leaders must prove through concrete action that they are still in this fight. Today's civil rights leaders, like their forebears, are certainly not giving up. They will keep pressure on the 50 Republicans and 2 Democrats who blocked Senate action. We need to broaden our strategy, Wade Henderson, interim president of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, told me. There are Republicans who should have been willing to at least engage in the debate, and they did not, and they were somehow let off the hook. The Biden administration can demonstrate its resolve in ways small and large. It should fully implement its March executive order, calling on all agencies of the federal government to help citizens register and vote. The president should take other pro-democracy executive actions. An example, make Election Day a federal holiday for government employees and encourage state holidays too. Despite the Supreme Court's gutting of the Voting Rights Act, the Justice Department should announce that it will use every tool it still has to enforce the Constitution's guarantees of equal voting rights. Congress should increase funding for this work. If some of the cases get to the Supreme Court, good. Let the conservatives on this court either stop trying to push us back to the late 19th century or prove beyond doubt how hostile they are to democracy and how urgent it is for Congress to act. Congress should try to pass whatever pieces of the Freedom to Vote and John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act it can. On any issue that touches on funding for easier voting access, the Senate should avoid the filibuster by using the reconciliation process. Reforming the 1887 Electoral Count Act is necessary, though no substitute for voting rights. Republicans who support reform of the law should be pressed to merge it with the John Lewis bill. At minimum, a revised law should block states from politicizing election boards and strengthen federal penalties against intimidating voters and election officials. In the states, organizers need to do all they can to block further suppression and subversion measures and, where possible, use the referendum process to undo some of the damage. Fighting voter suppression in this fall's election will be work-intensive and expensive, so activists should concentrate their efforts. The Times call for a Georgia summer project, akin to the 1964 Freedom Summer in Mississippi, and flood the state with resources through Election Day and beyond. Georgia Republicans have enacted some of the worst election laws in the nation, and two of the most forceful Democratic champions of voting rights, Senator Raphael G. Warnock and gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams, will be on the ballot. Other states that might be focal points, Florida, Arizona, Wisconsin, and Texas, all have key races and voting challenges. and that was giving up on voting rights now would be unconscionable, by E. J. Dionne Jr. And he wrote this for the Washington Post. And now, from Dr. Robert Brake of Ocean Park, Washington. Oh, beautiful is my kind of America. In these troubled times, I can think of no song that better captures the greatness and spirit of America than America the Beautiful, our signature patriotic song. Sadly, I sometimes forget the men and women who died for my freedom. It is often hard for me to grasp their bravery and conviction to the freedom I sometimes take for granted. But when I first listened to legendary blues man Ray Charles's stunning interpretation of America, I heard him launch his recording not with spacious skies and amber waves, but with a darker fifth stanza, which reads, "Oh, beautiful for heroes proved in liberating strife, who more than self their country loved, and mercy more than life. America, America, may God thy gold refine, till all success be nobleness, and every gain divine." Charles elected to focus on the huge sacrifices necessary to preserve the sweet America he loved so much. That version seemed oh so right to me. Beginning with images of sacrifice and death, then moving to a prayer that asks, with no guarantee of being answered, that those sacrifices not be in vain, Ray Charles implied that Americans must earn the very familiar verse that follows. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain. Ray Charles also asked for God's guidance so I can use the gifts he gave me for good. That eloquently defines what I consider the real roots of America. Oh, beautiful has captured my heart and the hearts of countless Americans. It moves me to tears and a real sense of patriotic feeling. I'm thankful for Catherine Lee Bates' inspired effort and Ray Charles's splendid rendition, because America the Beautiful conveys an attitude of appreciation and gratitude for our nation's extraordinary physical beauty and abundance without mean-spirited nationalism and triumphalism. When he sang, "God done shed his grace on thee," Ray Charles was transforming an anthem to a hymn. I admired his reflections on the wrongs America has undergone, while also focusing on her beauty and greatness. Ray Charles's version of America the Beautiful remains the least boastful of patriotic songs, and even so, his version teaches us all a new humility, and that is beautiful. And now, from Jim Dott, an annual poem he sends, which is gorgeously always illustrated by Maylee Robin Dott. Pomegranate. Its ripened husk, an orb of burnished garnet, within its orb a thousand arils, within each arils rubied flesh, one sweet acidic seed. You've heard the stories where the poorest, youngest, most foolish, least among us is the one who completes the quest, solves the riddle, saves us all. It's an ancient motif, thousands of variations. But have you heard this tale, where the dead king's only daughter has a single day to deliver to the dragon in the mountain an entire forest, born in her own hands, or else lose to his incendiary breath her life, the lives of everyone within the realm? She thinks, impossible. No one can carry an entire forest. And so she wanders, bereft, believes all is lost. Then passing a girl eating a pomegranate, stops, turns back, sees its ruby juice trickle from her chin, hears its seeds crunch between her teeth, inhales its sweetness from her breath, and knows a pomegranate, yes, a pomegranate, within each fruit, a forest, a future. And that was by Jim Todd, who wrote in the card he sent with the poem, "I always think of Rothke's quote, in a dark time the eye begins to see at this time of year." And it was the motto I always ran at the top of my newspaper, the North Coast Times Eagle, for all of the years I published. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk engineers this program. One of my oldest and closest friends, Michael D. Wade, has died in Astoria, where he lived for many years. He was an especially good artist of rare and creative spirit, serious and mirthful simultaneously. His work was usually and literally out of this world, forms and designs unique to his imagination, which gave them form and shape. He once drew the hangover of a mutual friend awaiting him outside a favorite tavern. Yet he could also illustrate books with original panache and insight. He illustrated two of John Paul Barrett's well-received odes to commercial fishing, Sea Stories of Dolphins and Dead Sailors, and Sea Gods and Sun Dogs, and all of Arthur Honeyman's autobiographical novels of being a spastic born with cerebral palsy, starting with the award-winning Sam and His Cart, which was made into a movie. J.P. and Honeyman were also my friends. Both are dead. And now Michael D. Wade, who so creatively imagined their words with his artistry. He also randomly and periodically contributed in the early aughts of this baby millennium to my newspaper, the North Coast Times Eagle, two full pages of pen and ink drawings, most often whimsical oddities and fantasy of non-earthly creatures. I knew him for more than half a century in Portland and Astoria. He often pledged that we were friends for life. Now we are. He was truly an irresistible artist of infinite inspiration. Perhaps there might soon be a farewell exhibit of his unique, original artistry. If indeed humanity does not blow up Earth, we still have the worldwide plague to contend with. Millions are dead, millions more might yet die. Do what is right to preserve our species. You know what to do. Vaccinate and isolate, however much possible.